All right, my name is Mark Wilson, and I want to talk a little bit about this intervention program that we devised, developed, adapted, if you will. It's called the Fuel Your Life program. Let me start off by acknowledging my collaborators at the University of Georgia and CDC, which funded this particular project. Essentially, what this is was an adaptation, a translation of the diabetes prevention program, modifying it to fit in a worksite environment. Now, how many of you are familiar with the diabetes prevention programs? Everybody heard? All right, so many of you, I'm preaching to the choir, you know what's going on here. For those of you who are less familiar with it, essentially what they did in a clinical setting, this was a multi-site trial that was conducted. For all intents and purposes, the diabetes prevention program is a weight management physical activity program. The idea is we're going to identify them when they're pre-diabetic and keep them from becoming diabetic. Largely, we're talking about type 2 diabetes here. Largely, it's related to weight gain. So the idea is we're going to keep them from gaining weight. Essentially, it was focused on reduction of caloric intake through fat and physical activity using self-monitoring and self-reinforcement behaviors is basically what the diabetes prevention program was. It was found to be successful in a clinical environment and an initial small trial in a worksite as well. So we thought we would adapt that to a broader worksite population. Now, CDC, when they talk about translation, in their definition, they use three phases. They talk about dissemination, they talk about implementation, and they talk about institutionalization. And I want to make sure that it was clear that what essentially we're testing here is the implementation of this behavior change intervention that was found effective in another setting, a clinical setting. So this is really the implementation research that CDC is talking about. All right, when we talk about implementation, we talk about the core components and how we want to keep true to those core components, because in theory, that is what's driving the effect of the program. And you can modify those core components slightly to fit the environment, the setting, the populations that you're working with, but you want to try to be true to those core components. For DPP, Diabetes Prevention Program, these are the six core components. And those of you that know DPP know that essentially the program really revolves around the first two. The weight loss physical activity goal, this is a manual that they give you. It's got 16 lessons in. You walk through that, learning how to modify your fat intake, how to shop and eat properly, prepare foods, how to be physically active, set goals for yourself and monitor those goals over a period of time. So that's a very, very much the core piece of that. DPP, originally a clinic-based intervention, had this lifestyle coach. The lifestyle coach was a trained nutritionist, physical educator, physical health educator, someone with a master's degree that was clearly very knowledgeable and trained in this area, met with the individual on a weekly basis for an hour to go over their progress, monitor, reinforce, hold them accountable for working towards this goal and putting a number of incentives in place to reinforce that. Very costly, very intensive. Not very realistic for work sites, as many of you know. So what we did was try to adapt that. And basically what we did was three simple adaptations, the biggest one of which was the adaptation of the delivery. Work sites don't have a full-time master trained person that can meet with employees for an hour a week. Not going to happen in realistic circumstances. So we backed off that a little bit and went to a dual approach, one of which is to use what we refer to as a site coordinator. Essentially, it was an occupational health nurse on site. And I'll talk about the sites here in a minute, but they're really manufacturing locations. So there was a nurse on site for injury and safety purposes. This is the individual that met with the individuals weekly in their safety meetings to provide some reinforcement, to give a message to everybody, but it wasn't one-on-one individual like the original DP. The second thing we tried to do was to try to link into this notion of a health advocate. You're familiar with lay health educators, health advocates. We called them health coaches. We identified with the cooperation of the occupational nurse in the worksite. We identified workers located throughout the facility that were interested in health, that were very interested in helping out, and they became our health coaches. They're the ones that were out there talking with the other employees, trying to reinforce our messages, trying to provide the support that they wanted. Any worksite program, we need some type of environmental supports, and so we put in a variety of signage, made sure that there was healthy items that were served in the vending machines. None of these sites had cafeterias, but they did have vending machines. We worked with the company to implement policies related to serving healthy items at their meal functions, at the business meetings. And we also tried to provide support to the home, because you certainly know how important the family is on this. We encourage all family members of the employees who wanted to participate, they were welcome to. We gave them a manual, we include them in everything except for the data collection. We don't have that. We didn't have them come in and do the biometric weigh-ins and screenings. There was a website that we had set up that provided a variety of information. Part of this was over the holiday period, so we provided healthy recipes and supports during the holiday period. We also sent home a packet of materials to the family member, the spouse, that listed ways that they could support their husband, wife, if they were not participating in the program, so they could provide support to their employee, their loved one, for this particular program. All right. The site, the company we worked with was Union Pacific Railroad, largest railroad west of the Mississippi, actually largest railroad in North America, but all their sites are west of the Mississippi. What we worked with was with their manufacturing sites. These were the ones, were the maintenance sites. These were the ones where they brought the employee, they brought the engines in to have them repaired and maintained. So it was very much a manufacturing site. And they were very interested in our program. And the reason is, if you know Union Pacific, they're pretty advanced in the way they offer health services and have for decades in the health promotion wellness services they offer their employees. But they still struggle mightily with obesity. This is their own HRA data that they do on an annual basis. You can see that the obesity within the organization continues to rise over time. They've tried a variety of things with very little success, so they're very interested in trying this. In fact, many of the guys we talked to joked about what they referred to as the railroad physique. You know, the railroad physique, that's what we were dealing with. They also had a lot of good data. If you look at the last line on that table, they had a lot of good data to show the costs to the organization of being overweight. And the great thing about obesity is it not only impacts a variety of what we consider to be health-related factors, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, et cetera, it also impacts safety. They've got injury data that shows that individuals that are overweight will tend to be injured more. And that's a lot of what's driving this. All right. Our project, simple and straightforward, 6 sites, randomly assigned to treatment and control. We did a pre-test, the post-test is 6 months. At the end of the program, the diabetes prevention program is about a 6-month program. And then we had a maintenance phase, and then it was 6 months after that. So we got pre, post, and follow-up data. As you can see, looking at the participants, these are white guys, married, tend to be low education overall. Only about a quarter of them have a 2-year associate degree or higher. However, the remarkable thing is income levels. 92% of 40,000 above. We had about 12 or 13% that were over 100,000. This is a very well-paid manufacturing, blue-collar, heavy labor, but very well-paid group. And you can see that they run multiple shifts, which is something we grappled with as well. And the vast majority of them were unionized. The 5% that weren't tend to be managers, supervisors, or the clerical staff. Everybody else was unionized. Measures of concern, primary BMI and weight, secondary eating behaviors and physical activity. And just to give you a little bit of flavor for this group, you can see that the average BMI, very high, above 30. High fat intake, and I think what's even more remarkable is the fruit and veggie intake, extremely low for this population. Now, this is daily servings of fruit and vegetable, below 1 on each. So that's the railroad diet, as they refer to. Now, the results. Something interesting happened here. We grew an extra intervention group. And I don't know what the heck to call them. We don't know what the heck to call them other than intervention true. Let me explain. One of our control groups, very large facility, North Little Rock, Arkansas, got a new occupational health nurse about the time we were starting this study. She wanted to impress and do well, so she took off. Anytime we went in and did a screening, now this is control group, nothing's supposed to go on there. We go into a screening, we leave, we come back in 6 months, we do another screening. Nothing's going on. She decided to put something in place. They did a Biggest Loser contest. They did all kinds of activities. She was really gung-ho. And what we found is that that group ended up not being a control group. They ended up being an intervention group. They weren't our intervention group. So we're calling them an intervention 2 group. And if anybody's got any better ideas on how to explain that, I certainly would be open to hearing that. What did we find overall? Real simple. Control groups, gradual increase in BMI and weight, and I'll show you the weight slide here in just a little bit of significant levels. View your life, we had basically a flat line, dropped off slightly by the time we got to the time 3 results. This is just time 1, time 2. We just finished entering the time 3 results, so I've got a little bit of a flavor for that. So we see a slight plateau or drop over time, and of course the funky intervention group went great guns and did much better than overall. So we did see significant decreases in BMI or plateauing of BMI. Same thing, this is weight, kilograms and pounds. What we see is the control groups increasing. Fuel Your Life, our program, is basically maintaining flatline. Now there's been a lot of discussion in the worksite literature you might be familiar with lately about this notion of maintenance. I was at a meeting a couple of years ago where the medical director for a very large organization located in the Northeast U.S. had indicated that their data over time shows that their employees gain about 0.3 BMI a year. So gain about 1 BMI point every 3 years over the course of time, that natural progression. So quite a bit of discussion about this idea of maintenance and the success associated with maintenance with the project, and I think that's kind of what we're showing here. Now remember, compared to DPP, this is a very low intensity intervention. DPP was high intensity. Someone sat down with them for an hour a week. This is very low. We have reminders, we have prompts in the worksite, we have a support structure in place, but we don't have that health educator meeting with them on a regular basis. However, I did want to show this slide because I think this does show that there has been some success even with this particular program. If you take a look at the top line, that is all those individuals who either did not gain any weight or gained weight over time. And what we see in the control group is over 2/3 of them either maintain or gain. That's that general progression over time. When the Fuel Your Life program was much less than that. In fact, we had over time, we had about 52% of the individuals that lost some weight at some particular level. So there's some positive things going on here. Because the nature, and I should have mentioned this earlier, because the nature of the work site, because of the fact that it was unionized, we couldn't, like we could in a clinical or community setting, we couldn't pull out only those that were pre-diabetic, only those that were at high risk, because then we would be discriminating against all employees. We want to be fair to all employees. So we included anybody who wanted to come, regardless of whether you were overweight or not. If you wanted to participate in this program, you could. So what we're seeing, I think a lot of these individuals that really didn't need to lose a lot of weight, even though clearly individuals throughout the organization did. A quick note, secondary measures look at eating behaviors as well as physical activity and really did not see much of a change in those. We used, as a note for you researchers out there, we used the IPAC as a measure of measuring physical activity. Maybe some of you, it rings a bell, International Physical Activity Questionnaire. We've had good luck in previous worksite studies with that. Turned out to be crap in this study. They were all triathletes that were running marathons daily. The data was just absolutely a mess, so we couldn't look at that overall, and we're actually starting to change that and looking at some other physical activity measures, and I'd be glad to talk with you later about that if you're interested. All right, what did we see with this? Outside of that funky second control, or second control group, intervention group, we basically saw a flat line of no gains overall in the population of the Fuel Your Life, slight decrease over time. We did see success in a number of the individuals, slightly over half did lose something, but almost half either had no gain or increased over time. And we think, after going in with process information, we think the key variable was this lifestyle coach. This was a very low intervention, low intensity approach. We wanted to see what would happen in a typical worksite program where we give you the materials, we provide a little support, a few environmental prompts and reminders to see how well it worked. And there was something positive going on, but not at the extent of what we would see if we had someone working with them constantly. So we think the lifestyle coach is the key ingredient, and we've got a follow-up study that we're working right now related to that. And I thank you for your attention.